Be motivated. Have a clear vision of what financial freedom would look like to you. Remember, taking the first few steps towards financial freedom may be difficult, but stick with it. Unlike climbing to the peak of a mountain where you must come back down, once you achieve financial freedom, you can stay there for the rest of your life, provided you are responsible with your money. If you are willing to work smart and hard, you can achieve financial freedom. You may run into other people who are saving far more than you, or who are earning much more than you. Some people are demotivated by this, but do not allow these situations to deter you. You may feel a little voice inside you that says, you aren't good enough, and you should just give up. You must be strong and keep these thoughts at bay. Do not allow anyone, even yourself, to get in between you and your path to financial freedom. While self-doubt is certainly an issue many people deal with, it will not be the only obstacle for you to overcome. Many people tend to think short-term when it comes to money. They want to see a massive change in their financial situation, and they want to experience said change in an unreasonably short period of time, like a year. Oddly enough, most people's real ambitions will end shortly after this goal. They will have a massive one-year goal, and then only a relatively minor increase of a goal for where they would like to be in 10 years. And that's if they even have a 10-year goal at all. People have this tendency to overreach short-term and underreach long-term. Set whatever short-term goal you want. However, be sure to have a powerful long-term focus. If you do not meet your one-year goal, keep pushing forward and keep focusing on achieving the massive success you can realize in a decade. Here are a few things to keep in mind while working to create financial freedom. 1. Make the hard decisions now, so you don't have to in the future. Don't spend all your money living in a big house and driving an expensive car, only to be forced to downsize and downgrade once you retire. Stay frugal now, so you can maintain at least the same standard of living in retirement, if not upgrading. You want your later years in life to be fun and full of joy. It really helps if you have money in the bank. 2. Be patient with your investments. Do not be afraid to sit on large portions of cash if the market is bad. It is better to wait and make a good investment than it is to not wait and make a bad one. 3. Always focus on reducing your tax burden. There are so many means to reduce your taxable income which most people never consider, let alone take advantage of. Every dollar you can save in taxes is a dollar you can invest in your future. Once you have initiated your Freedom Fund, where should you invest? Well, before we talk about where to invest, we need to talk about investment strategy. The number one rule of investing is diversification. Your investments should include different types of financial products among varying sectors with varying degrees of risk and reward. To simplify it, imagine you have three investment buckets. Bucket number one is the security bucket. These are for very low-risk investments. Bonds are primarily used in the security bucket. Bonds will not make you rich, but are unlikely to lose your money, and will typically slightly outpace inflation. The second bucket is the growth bucket. These investments are riskier than bonds, but also provide the opportunity for much larger growth. Stocks are generally purchased for the growth bucket. Which stocks you choose are up to you and your risk tolerance. You may opt for a market or sector tracking index fund in addition to or in place of individual stock picks. The third bucket is the dream bucket. After you have some success in your first two buckets, move some of the winnings over to your dream bucket. This is your fun bucket. What are the things in life you have always wanted to do? Do you want to travel through Europe or take a cruise around the world? Do you want an exotic sports car or vacation home? Whatever you want, this is where you save for it. This bucket will keep you motivated and remind you investing in your financial freedom does not have to be boring and painful. It can be inspiring and improve the quality of your life. So those are the three buckets. How much money should you allocate to each? Of course, that depends on you. What is your risk tolerance? How old are you? What are your goals? And how much are you putting into your freedom fund each month? There is no right or wrong answer. Use your best judgment. If you trust yourself, you will often find the right answer. How do you become a successful investor? It would probably be a good idea to start by learning from those who have already succeeded at investing. This concept of learning from those who have succeeded in any given area is not different with investing. Look for the greats. When you study these individuals with a long track record of over a decade of significantly outperforming the market, you will have a significant advantage over most other investors who merely pick random companies they like and invest in them. One of the most successful investors in the world is Ray Dalio. Ray is the founder of Bridgewater Associates, which has the distinction of being the world's largest hedge fund. Dalio has a name for his investment strategy, the All-Season Allocation Plan. The purpose of this plan is to grow your wealth regardless of what state the economy is in. As you likely know, the stock market and the economy both have ups and downs. These ups and downs are called seasons in Ray's plan. Through expert and strategic diversification and allocation, Ray can produce a portfolio which can build in thriving or shrinking economies. Of course, Ray's actual plan is extremely complex. He does run the largest hedge fund in the world, after all. However, he has been generous enough to share a simplified version of his strategy. This strategy is so easy to understand, anyone, even you, can apply it. Remember, this allocation comes directly from the mouth of one of the greatest investors of all time. Gold will consist of 7.5% of your portfolio and 7.5% in commodities. Gold and commodities will help protect you against times of increased inflation. 30% of your portfolio will be spread across all types of stocks. These stocks will help you capture significant growth during periods when the economy is doing well. Lastly, the remaining 55% of your portfolio will be allocated to United States bonds. Bonds are considered to be one of the lowest risk investments and will help you protect your overall portfolio when the stock market is performing poorly. It is also recommended to invest a portion of your savings in an annuity. This is a contractual agreement where an insurance company will pay you a guaranteed monthly amount for the rest of your life in exchange for an upfront payment. This is one way to ensure you will at least have some form of income no matter how long you live and no matter how long you have been out of work for. When you save into your financial freedom account, invest according to the all-season allocation strategy and pay for guaranteed annuity payments, and in your later years, you will have finally reached true financial freedom. Millennial Money by Patrick O'Shaughnessy. Millennial Money discusses the concerns millennials, those born roughly between 1980 and 2000, have regarding investing. Millennials have shown a distrust in various forms of investing and a strong sense of risk aversion. While there are certainly forms or strategies of investing which can be risky, these young individuals are missing the opportunity to build a stronger financial foundation for themselves. With the traditional forms of retirement investing, retirement pensions and Social Security being put at risk due to the unstable economy and trillions of dollars in debt, it is more important than ever for young adults to take their retirement investments seriously. Are you a young adult? Do you regularly think about retirement and retirement investment strategies? If you are like most young adults, probably not. Retirement feels so far away to those in their 20s, it rarely, if ever, will even cross their mind. Some young adults will even say things like, "When I get old, just kill me." While there does appear to be a surprisingly large number of young people with this type of thinking, there is a non-surprisingly low number of old people who still hold that belief. Once the young person grows old, all of a sudden he finds himself very much wanting to live, but now in a financial bind due to poor saving and planning. Due to the way compound interest works, It is much easier for these younger individuals to save for retirement. They only need to put away a small amount in the early years because that money has multiple decades to grow. On the other hand, those who decide to wait must sacrifice much more because their money only has 5, 10, or 15 years to grow. In many cases, the latter individuals will be unable to retire and forced to work into old age. Of course, working into old age is not a bad thing. In fact, it has been shown to increase lifespan. However, you should work because you want to work, not because you must work. Working because you have no savings and need to work to survive will create undue amounts of stress, which will in turn reduce lifespan. Now that we know millennials should be saving and investing for retirement, how exactly should they go about doing that? Think about your life in 50 years. How do you want it to be? Do you see an old, frail person who can't walk and watches TV all day long? Or do you see a healthy and vibrant person who still has a purpose in life and enjoys every day? The decision is yours, and your actions now will help decide which future you have. Often with age comes medical issues. If you are able to afford to take care of these issues, you will be able to stay healthier with better levels of energy for longer. In 50 years, do you want to have millions of dollars in investments and savings and the freedom to live your life how you want to live it? Or do you want to have little to no savings and be forced to live off a small pension which hardly covers basic living requirements? Clearly, we all want a bright and prosperous future. So what do we have to do to develop this long-term financial security? Most millennials have been brought up to not trust the stock market and believe a savings account is the best way to save for the future. Unfortunately, this is not a particularly effective strategy. The interest you will earn in a savings account is generally close to zero and will be greatly outweighed by inflation. This means your money will lose value every day it is in a savings account. So if keeping your money in a savings account is not the answer, then what is? The stock market. Yes, the dreaded stock market millennials are so afraid of is the answer to your problems. The earlier these millennials get started investing in the stock market, the better off they will be. The long-term benefits of beginning your investing early in life cannot be overstated. An average investment strategy started early in life will greatly outgrow a great investment strategy started late in life. That is how important starting young is. In many cases, the age you start at is more important than the stocks you choose to invest in. For example, let's say you didn't think much about investing in your earlier years, and now you are 40 years old and decided it's time to start seriously investing in your future. If you put away $10,000 per year at a return of 7% annually, in 25 years when you turn 65, your $250,000 investment will have grown into $1 million. Sounds good, right? Not so fast. If you started at the age of 22, which is roughly when young adults get out of college and start working, they will have invested a total of $430,000, which would have grown into $4.7 million. That means the extra 18 years of investing will gross you $3.7 million more. After you deduct the $180,000 invested, you are left with a $3,520,000 net profit. When compared to the mere $750,000 net profit off a $250,000 investment starting at the age of 40, this demonstrates just how vital starting young is. Starting early can be the difference between having just enough to barely get by, hoping you don't outlive your savings, and living a life of true financial freedom. Despite this staggering difference, most millennials are opposed to investing in the stock market. Part of this is due to them growing up during the financial crisis of 2008. This was the single harshest decline in the stock market since the Great Depression. Does it really surprise you that these young adults are so fearful of the market after so many of them had their family's financial life destroyed by it? Also, despite the 2008 financial crisis, The older generation still understands the stock market is one of the best places to have your money invested. In 2014, 46% of non-millennials were invested in the stock market. Only 28% of millennials were invested in the stock market. Some millennials think they do not need to invest in stocks because they believe their pension will take care of them. While this may be the case, it should not be relied on. If you are lucky, your pension will still be intact, not only when you retire, but decades after that. However, what if that is not the case? The government is playing a dangerous, unsustainable game with your retirement. Eventually, something will give. Do you want to risk your safety, hoping that breaking point will occur after you have passed? What you are really doing in that case is betting against your own mortality. You do not want to die young or right after you retire. Assume you will live for a long time and prepare yourself financially for it. In the year 1900, the life expectancy was a mere 47 years. In 2013, that number jumped to a staggering 79. How do you think that number will change in the coming decades? You may be living far longer than you anticipated. The government's costs for healthcare and pensions are rising at a disturbing rate. Every single year, Medicare costs increase by 11%. This is not just 11% for 1 or 2 years, but an 11% increase every single year on average since 1966. Is that sustainable? It is easy to forget that the government is no different than any other business. If your expenses exceed your revenue for long enough, eventually the company will go bust. This is not good news for millennials relying on their government-backed retirement. It is a bit of a double whammy for millennials because they are currently paying taxes to the government to support those who are currently retired. However, they likely will not receive those same benefits when they are retired because there will not be enough new workers to support the ever-increasing population and percentage of retirees. So what does this mean? It means you need to invest in and support yourself. And the best way to do this is to get into the stock market. Let us assume you have accepted the fact you need to start investing in stocks. Where should you start? You should start by recognizing no single company should be expected to save you. You need to invest in many different types of companies, both domestic and international. This strategy is simple and logical. Yet many investors do not follow this advice. They pick a few companies, typically domestic, cross their fingers, close their eyes, and hope the stock goes up. Clearly, this is not the best investment strategy. While worldwide economic recessions and depressions do occur, they are generally more prevalent in some countries than others. Therefore, if you are invested exclusively or heavily in one country, you are more at risk to see a 50% or more reduction in your savings. On the other hand, if you spread your investments among multiple countries, you are much less likely to see that severe of a drop. We have all heard the saying, don't put all your eggs in one basket. So why do people feel the need to diverge from this common wisdom when it comes to investing? Simple. They get caught up in the emotion. People who are not used to investing will come into the game, and lo and behold, after a few weeks, they will think they have found the granddaddy of all investments. This is the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Well, maybe it's just the talking heads on TV looking for something to fill airtime. After all, a stock market show would be boring and quick if they came on and said, "Yep, everything is pretty much the same as yesterday." Not exactly the best strategy to increase viewership, sell newspapers, or get website clicks, is it? So every day, it's either the best day in history to invest, or the sky is going to fall and you need to sell, sell, sell. Most people get caught up in this, especially early on in their investing career. Try your best to learn from other people's failures and not make those same amateur mistakes of overinvesting in one or two companies. Another benefit to diversifying your portfolio with international stocks is it protects your money against harmful currency changes. If you are exclusively invested in one currency, and that currency experiences a devaluation relative to other powerful currencies, You can see a loss in purchasing power even if your investments go up. On the other hand, if you are invested in a country whose currency becomes stronger, you will see an increase in purchasing power even if the stock valuations do not change. This strategy of international diversification protects your financial worth in multiple ways. How should you choose which stocks or investment strategies to abide by? Most people will follow the so-called experts of the field. Is this your strategy? One common strategy recommended by experts is the sector leader strategy. This is a strategy wherein by you purchase stock in the top-performing companies of each sector. A sector is an area of related investments. While some will break down sectors a bit differently, there are generally 10 sectors. Financials, utilities, consumer discretionary, consumer staples, energy, healthcare, industrials, technology, telecom, and materials. The sector leader strategy would suggest you purchase roughly the two leaders of each sector for a total of 20 stocks. This is quite a bit of work for a passive investor. And if you are looking for a simplified version, you can purchase a market tracking index fund. The recommended index fund would be one which tracks the S&P 500, which is inclusive of all sectors. This is simple for you and much cheaper because you only need to pay for one transaction fee as opposed to 20. However, if you are motivated to attempt to beat the market, you cannot be tracking it. How do you attempt to beat the market? One alternative strategy to the index fund is avoid the largest market cap companies. A market cap is essentially the size of the company. The larger the market cap, the larger the company is. The larger a company is, the harder it is for that company to see significant growth. For example, huge companies like ExxonMobil, Apple, and Intel may grow $5 billion, but they are so large this may only grow the company around 1%. In contrast, if you purchase small and medium-sized companies, you have the potential to see gains of several 100% with 2 or 3 years. This is impractical for larger companies. The strategy of investing in small and medium-sized companies is called sector bargain strategy. If you have any doubt in your mind, all you need to do is look at the numbers. There is an index fund called the Russell 3000. This fund covers the 3,000 largest U.S.-based companies. Then there is the mainstay S&P 500, which covers the largest 500 companies. Since the Russell 3000 has 6 times as many companies, and 5/6 of those companies are smaller than the companies in the S&P 500, its performance relative to the S&P 500 will tell you how those smaller companies are doing. If you track these two funds' performances dating back to 1979, you will find the Russell 3000 to outperform the S&P 500 by over 1,100%. So what is the best investment strategy for millennials? Let's call it the millennial money strategy. In short, it is to purchase small and mid-cap stock in companies which have the potential to see great growth. Why is this millennial money strategy the best? There are a few reasons. When you purchase a stock with a lower price point, you can purchase a wider variety of stocks. This will allow increased diversification. Plus, it is these smaller companies where all the truly great bargains are. If you want to grow your money fast, you must look at these smaller companies. How exactly do you go about evaluating the prospects of a company long term? First and foremost, you want to look at earning. Is the company profitable, or is it losing money? How much revenue is the company bringing in? Cash flow is extremely important to a growing company, so you want to make sure it has access to all the cash it needs to operate and grow. Timing is also important. You want to purchase a stock when the market is becoming more aware of it. If you wait too long and big institutional buyers start purchasing, you will have missed out on huge gains. You want to get in right before these institutional buyers do. One way to notice this strong momentum, which may attract institutional buyers, is to look at the stock's performance over the past 6 months. If the performance has been strong, it is likely to start attracting the attention of some big buyers. This is a great time for you to get in. An investment strategy which combines momentum trading with value seeking is fantastic for millennials. Again, if you have any doubt, just look at the numbers. Since 1972, an investment strategy which follows these guidelines will have seen an annual growth rate more than double the market. You can beat the market. You just need to have a proper strategy. As simple as the strategy is, maybe it is important to take note, humans constantly veer off course and make irrational decisions based out of greed or fear. Psychologists have looked at why humans behave this way and call it constructive paranoia. A concept which denotes fear of loss is an evolutionary advantage. This may have made sense for the caveman, but it does not make sense for the modern investor. You must think clearly and logically. One way to do this is to strictly stick with a sound investment strategy. Let's look at a study from Stanford University which analyzed the investment decisions of 20 students. The study was disturbingly straightforward. The student had the option to invest $1 before a coin flip. If the coin ended up on heads, they lost the dollar. If the coin ended up on tails, they were given $2.50. Effectively, anyone who graduated middle school, let alone anyone attending Stanford University, should be fully aware the obvious answer is, you opt in for the bet every single time. Yet when students would lose the dollar, 59% decided against betting on the next flip. It should not need to be explained how immensely ridiculous this is. These were not undereducated, unemployed people. These were Stanford University students. Of course, you never make such an egregious error, but you do need to understand this is how most people think. The second they lose something, they become exceedingly risk-averse to a point of irrationality. Children see the stock market go down once, and it destroys their parents' lives. Of course, they were likely unaware their parents were too heavily invested in the stock market for what they could afford. They were likely not diversified enough, and many were taking on the ultimate risk by using leverage. For those unfamiliar, leverage is borrowing money to purchase more stock than you can really afford. When the stock market drops big, people who are using high amounts of leverage often go bankrupt. Keep this in mind when investing in the stock market. People are extremely risk-averse. They will be supremely confident as the market rises gradually over time, and then the moment it begins to waver, they get scared and sell. This creates a chain reaction, which accelerates the process. When major stock declines happen, they tend to happen much quicker due to this fear of loss. For example, when the stock crisis of 2008 occurred, it took about 5 months to erase 12 years' worth of gains. This constructive paranoia is a common investing mistake, but it is not the only mistake. Greed is just as prevalent. This is demonstrated during market bubbles. Even when stocks have clearly breached a point of unsustainability, and an untrained eye with no information other than a basic chart could tell you it looks like it's far above the average, people will still pile on. All people see is the stock going up, and they become blinded by greed. Whereas the obvious choice would be to wait for the bubble to pop, drop 30-50%, and then invest in the stock. People just cannot resist the urge to pile on an overvalued stock. You want to separate your emotions and instincts from your logical and rational investment decisions. This is part of the power of creating a solid investment system and sticking to that system. One tool which would benefit you is setting up an automatic deduction from your bank account. This would take the decision of whether you should invest in your future or not out of your hands. Run the numbers and figure out how much you can afford to deduct from your bank account each month. This will keep you motivated to stay on top of your investments. As you know, every month money is coming in, and you're going to have to figure out where to put it. Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. Rich Dad, Poor Dad is a modern classic which will help guide you to financial independence. The book stresses the different views the upper class holds and passes down to their children when compared to lower and middle class families. While lower and middle class families will often tell you developing great wealth is nearly impossible, and your best bet is to get a reliable mid-level job working for someone else, The higher class families will install confidence in their children, telling them they can achieve greatness if they are willing to work hard and take risk. You have probably heard of the term rat race, but how specifically would you explain that term to a child who is unfamiliar? One general way to define it is, the rat race is when you spend your whole life working for someone else, making only a little money, when the person you are working for is making lots of money. Your definition may vary slightly. You may throw in the massive chunk of money you send off to Uncle Sam, but this is the general concept. So here's the question. Are you working for someone else making not that much money while they make all the money? Are you part of the rat race? If so, it does not have to be like this. You can change your life for the better. You can leave the rat race forever. But why do people join the rat race to begin with? We know we don't want to be a part of the rat race, so what happens? What happens is most children are taught from a young age to do what they are told. They spend all their time trying to get to the end of the maze, when what they should be doing is sticking their head up and questioning why they are running in the maze to begin with. Children are told by their parents, extended family, teachers, celebrities on TV, and society as a whole, go to school, get good grades, go to college, even if you need to take on tens of thousands of dollars of debt. Then go work for someone else for the rest of your life and do what you are told. This is what society tells us to do. Is it really a surprise most of us are a part of the rat race? As you grow up, you may begin to despise the rat race and spending all your time making someone else rich. Yet most people continue to be a part of it. They make just enough money to avoid poverty and thus feel like they have something to lose. This inhibits them from taking what most people consider to be a risk and achieving wealth. It should be noted, money will cause two polar reactions in you: extreme fear and obsessive greed. When individuals are given large amounts of money, their greed takes over, then try to amass material possessions. All of a sudden, their life becomes revolved around buying a bigger house, more exotic cars, spending ridiculous amounts of money at nightclubs, strip clubs, and restaurants. This is easy to see in those who do not have to work hard for their money and are given it quickly in large sums. Lottery winners, professional athletes, and actors who have had their big breakout success. These individuals will earn millions of dollars per year and still find a way to spend every single penny. Often, they will spend millions more than they have and go bankrupt. On the other hand, those who do not have money are ridden by fear. They are constantly worried about running out of it, not having a roof over their head, their car breaking down, and worst of all, not being able to feed their family. A lack of money can destroy even the strongest and most noble of man. Those who have difficulty managing finances are particularly vulnerable to the emotional roller coaster of money. They will alternate between extreme fear when they have no money and extreme greed the moment they receive it. For instance, you have been getting by just fine and receive a promotion at work. This promotion comes with a significant pay raise. An individual who is responsible with financial management would invest this extra money. He may also take 10 or 20% of the difference in pay and allow himself to increase his expenses that amount. However, the remaining 80 to 90% would still be invested. For example, if you have been earning a post-tax income of $5,000 per month and receive a raise to a post-tax income of $6,000 per month, your net increase is $1,000 monthly. If $800 to $900 of that extra income was to be added to your existing savings, that would be a fiscally responsible decision. Unfortunately, this is not how most people behave. The moment they receive a raise, they will increase their expenses nearly the full amount. They may upgrade apartments, buy a second vehicle, and start spending more on entertainment and dining. This is clearly not sustainable and will not lead to great wealth. Despite an individual spending all their income on frivolous, unnecessary expenses, they will then claim the stock market should be avoided because it's too risky. They don't want to lose their money after all. Fear and greed in relation to money are the number one factors which will inhibit you from achieving financial freedom. How can you control these two dynamic forces and create the wealthy life you've always wanted? First, you need to develop an investing IQ. You should study various investments with at least the same rigor you study a college class. After all, most college courses will have nothing to do with your ability to succeed, and yet don't you put in copious amounts of time and effort into studying? However, when it comes to financial IQ, your ability to save, invest, and build wealth, how many hours a week do you spend studying this vital skill for financial success? Possessing a strong financial IQ will decrease the ability of your emotion to overcome your intellect. You will be more likely to make logical, rational, strategic decisions. If you go out and ask the average person what it takes to be rich, they will typically tell you a person must be very talented. This is true to a degree, but is hardly the primary cause. You can walk into any gathering of people and find a few people who are talented at something. Many people are artistically talented. Some are great athletes. Some are extremely intelligent. Yet the vast majority of these people will not be wealthy. So, wealth cannot be primarily determined by talent alone. This statement may sound redundant, but people who are wealthy are generally wealthy because they are good with money. The ability to become wealthy is a talent unto itself. Understanding and applying the basic concepts of saving, investing, accounting, and reducing tax burdens are the true cause of most self-made wealth. Despite these skills being the most direct path to financial success, we are raised in a society which does not teach or encourage this type of behavior. The educational system may teach you some useful information, but financial literacy is not included. Similarly, while some people may say you should save, their actions speak differently. Most people admire those with nicer cars and bigger houses. Appearing to be more successful than the next-door neighbors becomes more important than actually being more successful than them. This is not a proper environment to raise children in. They grow up learning nothing about high-interest debt and how devastating it can be to one's financial well-being. They learn nothing of investing young and accruing compound interest and how profoundly positive it can be to one's financial well-being. Once these children leave school and start working, they fail to save and invest and max out any credit card they can get their hands on. You may think this is a problem which only affects individuals of low intelligence, but financial IQ and book smart IQ are not the same thing. Many highly educated people are just as irresponsible with their money and often hold even more debt because they attain better paying jobs. This debt is in addition to the debt they often accumulate in college. One simple way to gauge how much people value fiscal responsibility is to look at pensions. Obviously, everyone who is unemployed is not currently contributing to a pension plan. Of those who are currently employed, only half have a pension of any kind. Of the half that do, roughly 80% are underfunded depending upon which metrics you use. When you put these numbers together, approximately 91% of Americans do not have a properly funded pension. Considering a pension is how most Americans plan to pay for retirement, this is a frightening number. The formal education system and society has left us with close to zero knowledge and training on financial intelligence. So if you want to increase your financial IQ, it is up to you and you alone. While starting young is certainly a significant advantage, it is never too late to start. No matter the poor decisions you may have made in the past, today you can turn over a new leaf of financial acuity. So where do you start? The first step is to look at your current financial situation, painful as it might be, and give it an honest appraisal. Next, you want to set goals for yourself. Where do you want to be financially in 6 months, a year, 5 years, 20 years, and so on? After that, you need to acquire the necessary education to reach those financial goals. Finally, you go about implementing that knowledge. So first things first, what is the financial situation you are in right now? Do you currently have investments? Are you currently employed? If so, what scale of pay increases can you expect over the next number of years? How significantly do you expect your expenses to grow over the next number of years? Will you be getting married, having more children, moving into a larger house? Now that you have appropriately assessed your current financial situation, it is now time to set goals. Some goals you may have to push back, and others you may bring closer. For example, you may have been eyeing the brand new Tesla and want to purchase it next year, but after analyzing your financial situation, decided it is best to push this back another 2 years. In contrast, you may have had a goal to purchase an investment property within the next 8 years. But after pushing back a few purchases like the Tesla and investing more in the stock market, you realize you can likely purchase an investment property within 5 years. Next, you start your financial education. By reading this book right now, you have already started that process. Congratulations. Essentially, you are investing in yourself. You are spending both your money and, much more precious, your time investing in your education. This is making a bet on yourself that you can and will succeed. Short term, your time investment will not reap much, if any, financial return. There is a certain threshold of information you must pass before you should go out into the real world and start investing significant portions of your savings. You do not want to read one single book on real estate or stock market investing and then go and gamble tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars. Think of it like college. Most people will spend 4 to 9 full-time years in college, depending upon which degree they attain. Generally, they are receiving zero financial compensation from their chosen field during this time. For example, a lawyer will spend an average of 7 years on their education post-high school before they ever see a dime of income related to law. That does not mean it is recommended to spend 7 years studying investing before you start. It simply means you need to focus heavily on your financial education and start small. You do not need to invest $100,000 your first month in the stock market. You can start out with $100 and grow your investment allocations as you grow your knowledge. Unlike how a traditional education generally works, your financial education can be part-time. When you have a few days off, enroll in seminars. If you have Wednesdays off, see if you can find a recurring finance class on that day. Listen to audiobooks on investing or money management while you drive and exercise. And read these books before bed. Search for both online and in-person networking groups, which focus on the accumulation of wealth. If you dedicate even a small portion of your spare time to your financial education, you will see significant improvements in your financial situation over the coming years. As the great Albert Einstein once said, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. So if you are unhappy with your current financial situation, clearly you need to change your financial decision. That only makes logical sense, right? One thing you need to train yourself to do is take intelligent, calculated risks. It is nearly impossible to amass great wealth without taking any risk at all. Part of the reason they could achieve that wealth is because they were able to control and manage their risk. They did not allow fear to dictate their actions. Taking a risk does not mean going to the roulette table and betting on black. It does mean investing in appropriate stocks, bonds, and real estate. The truth is, unless you are already earning a massive amount of money, it is much riskier to not invest your money and instead keep it in a savings account. Your money will only depreciate over time, and when you need it decades in the future, it will have little value. While the stock market is often spoken about most regarding investment strategies, it is not the only option. Real estate is a fantastic option. Tax lien certificates are also a good opportunity to make quick returns. In tax lien investing, you can earn 8 to 30% on your investment. This far surpasses the dismal 0.21% annual interest you will find in a typical savings account. Of course, the higher the potential reward, the higher the risk. It is extremely unlikely the money in your FDIC-insured savings account is going to disappear. On the other hand, you could lose your entire portfolio, or even more if you pick a few risky stocks and use leverage. The goal is to balance the risk and reward. You want to have the potential to grow your wealth where you want it to be, while simultaneously taking the least amount of risk possible to achieve said growth. The more growth you need, the more risk you will need to accept. Wealth accumulation does not happen overnight, and does have its difficulties. It is important to stay motivated during this long roller coaster ride. One way to increase and sustain motivation is to have a list of things you do want and do not want in your life. For instance, you may want to have a net worth of $100,000 within 4 years. On the other hand, you may not want to end up in the same awful financial situation your parents did. Reading this list regularly will help keep you motivated through the hard times. A second way to keep motivation high is spending money on yourself before you concern yourself with spending money on bills. Before you immediately judge, hear this out. Do not go out and waste all your money, but do go out and purchase something which you do not need, but really want. You have a very specific intention for this, and that is to increase your motivation to make more money. If you live a boring life where you never buy anything you want, how do you expect to stay motivated? On the other hand, if you earn more and actually allow yourself to spend a bit of that money on yourself, you will be more motivated to continue working hard on your income. Other sources of inspiration, which can even double as education, are reading books and biographies about great financial minds like Warren Buffett and Donald Trump. While financial intelligence is important, it cannot overcome a flawed personality. Allowing yourself to be controlled by fear or greed, being lazy, having poor determination, and hubris are all personality traits which will negatively affect your ability to succeed. Most people will define lazy as doing nothing, but laziness is more than that. Laziness is avoiding what is important. You may do that by watching TV all day, or you may be doing that by running around like a chicken with its head cut off, acting like you are so busy. Unfortunately, busy does not mean effective. Many people will be busy all day long and accomplish absolutely nothing of significance. They are being busy to avoid doing what really needs to get done. This is another form of laziness, and it is an easy trap to fall into. You must avoid this at all costs. Arrogance can also destroy success. Arrogance will cause individuals to stop learning and study their chosen investments less than they should. They will believe their idea is right even without having completed the proper background work. You may get lucky for a while, but eventually this will catch up with you. Stockbrokers know how to feed your arrogance. You will tell them any random stock, and they will praise what a brilliant idea you have. What a wonderful choice! You want to buy how many shares? No, you found a golden nugget here. You need to buy more. Unfortunately, most people will fall for this trap and invest more money than they really should simply because the stockbroker wants a higher commission for selling more stock. The greatest investors of all time preach the importance of proper diversification and not being too heavily invested in one stock. If they invest this way, so should you. You need to understand what an asset is and what a liability is. An asset is a possession which will result in a net positive return. For the most part, any stock which goes up will be an asset. A rental property which costs you $1,100 per month and produces an income of $1,500 per month will result in a net profit of $400 a month and is therefore an asset. A liability is the opposite. It is something which results in a net loss. Purchasing a car is the largest liability most people hold. As an investor, you are looking to maximize your assets and minimize your liabilities. The list of liabilities is nearly endless. It is virtually anything you buy which you cannot resell for more money or does not pay you every month. Assets, on the other hand, are a much shorter list. Here are a few. individual stocks, index funds, mutual funds, bonds, real estate which generates positive cash flow, or is appreciating in value quicker than its expenses, royalties, and lending money with interest. Think of your money like employees. You can have your employees sitting around not doing anything, or you can commit your employees to work so they start making you wealthier. The more employees you set to work, the more work you can get done. The more work you get done, the more employees you will have. A simple cycle, right? Well, maybe simple in theory, but not necessarily in practice. Most people still send their workers off to places where they will not produce a net positive result, or at least a significant one. For example, many people classify a house as an asset. Not so fast. Most Americans use the standard 30-year mortgage. In this situation, you are paying massive amounts of interest worth more than the house itself. In addition, you have property taxes and related maintenance costs every year. When you add all that up, you do not necessarily come out on the other end with more purchasing power. That is not to say you should never buy a house. Just be aware, it is not always a cut-and-dry asset. The Richest Man in Babylon by George Clason. The Richest Man in Babylon consists of several stories providing ancient financial wisdom from Babylon. Here, you will both experience these parables as well as how they relate to today's modern world. It is said a long time ago, there was a man in Babylon named Arkad. Arkad was the richest man in all of Babylon. Two of Arkad's childhood friends asked him how he became so rich. They told Arkad they had worked very hard and for long hours, yet his friends could barely afford to provide food for their family. How was Arkad able to create such a great wealth from nothing? Arkad appreciated the question and smiled. He told them in his younger years he was a scribe for a man of great wealth, and that man told him the secret to attaining great riches. What was this great secret? You must take a portion of everything you earn and pay yourself. This means you must never spend all your money. Instead, you must take at least some of all the money you receive and invest it wisely. Arkad followed this advice and got started investing. He began to save as much money as he could. Then he gave out a small loan to a shield maker. This shield maker had to pay interest on the loan, which began to grow Arkad's small wealth. This is the simple beginning of how the richest man in Babylon came to be. Why are some people so great at building wealth? Why are some people unable to hold on to any wealth no matter how much they are given? The answer, of course, is quite simple. Those who build wealth are wonderful at saving portions of their earnings and investing that money. On the other hand, those who destroy wealth squander their money on unnecessary purchases. The true key to increasing net worth lies in the middle of these extremes. You do not want to stuff every penny under your mattress, but you must also not spend frivolously. The sweet middle is being able to save, but then having the confidence to risk that money by investing it. Arkad had no guarantee the shield maker would pay him the agreed upon interest, let alone pay him back at all. Yet he was willing to take the risk to grow his wealth. Of course, before you can loan or invest money, you need to have it. Therefore, the first step is to save. Clearly, to save, you must spend less than what you earn. Relative to your neighbors or friends who spend every penny they have, this will require you to live below your current means. This also means you will appear to have less money in the short term. How much you decide to live below your current means is your choice. Perhaps that means changing your international week-long vacation to Paris to something domestic and less expensive. It could also mean foregoing your so-loved designer coffee or deluxe toilet paper for a generic brand. While saving is certainly the first step, it is not the last. Hoarding your money will not grow it. You must invest your savings for it to truly develop into wealth. How much risk you would like to take is your own decision. You may opt for lower-risk investments like government bonds, moderate-risk investments like blue-chip stocks, or high-risk investments like funding startups. Regardless of your investment platform, you must do the research. You cannot pick a random stock or startup company to invest in. You cannot loan money to a random person. You must understand who you are giving your money to and why. You must decide for yourself if this is a wise investment decision. Would you consider yourself a wise person? How about knowledgeable? Most people consider themselves to be both. However, most people also take actions which would indicate the opposite. The paradoxical nature of wisdom is those who have it do not believe themselves to have it. Those who have wisdom and a broad and deep scope of knowledge have learned enough to know how little they know. For every one thing they learn, they realize there are multiple things they do not know. Therefore, the more a person knows, the more a person knows he does not know, and this keeps him modest and humble. It is generally those who do not have much knowledge who believe themselves to possess great amounts of it. Be careful of this paradox the next time you are feeling confident. You may want to remind yourself of the great philosopher Socrates, who once said, "I know that I know nothing." You must keep Socrates' great wisdom in your mind when learning. Do not allow yourself to believe you have acquired profound knowledge after a short period of studying. Seek for the questions to which you do not have the answers. The acquisition of new information should only bring to light more areas of which you know nothing. Not acknowledging these areas will transform a lack of knowledge into ignorance. If you do not acknowledge them, you will never increase your learning in that area. Imagine a scientist any time up until the past few hundred years. They knew so little, it would have been easy to think they knew everything there was to know. The theory of relativity and quantum mechanics had not yet been discovered. We had little knowledge of outer space and how it worked. Even electricity had not yet been discovered. In these eyes of the average man back then, they had more or less figured out anything that could be figured out. They did not know enough to know what they did not know. In contrast, today's scientists have much more information relative to the scientists of previous millenniums. Today, we have dark matter and dark energy. We have absolutely no idea what they are. Do not be fooled by the name. We do not know if dark matter is matter, and we do not know if dark energy is energy. It is simply the name which was given to it. We can measure the effects of these forces due to the amazing scientific equipment we have relative to years past. So, we know something is there, but we don't know what it is. In other words, we know just enough to know what we don't know. Unfortunately, most people are not as open about not having the answers to all of life's questions, including finances. In fact, when average people were tested to demonstrate various forms of financial literacy, like calculating compound interest, they failed miserably. Despite the results, most people still consider themselves to be financially savvy. A fool and his money are soon parted. While this lack of financial intelligence may be bad for others, it is good for you. When you study and begin to understand far more about investing than others, you will soon be benefiting from their mistakes. With proper studying, investment strategy, and rational decision-making, you will be beating them in the investing game before you know it. When do you want to become rich? 10 years? 1 year? Tomorrow? Most people want to become rich tomorrow, and they take actions which are exceedingly risky to attempt to obtain that overnight success. Of course, this hurts the individual, as rarely will he succeed in being rich overnight. Almost all of the time, he will lose his entire investment. You may be able to go into a casino, get lucky, and multiply your money a few times over, but this is money won, not earned, and will soon be gone. Instead, you should just view the goal of wealth as a long-term process which contains numerous tiny steps, as well as many setbacks. But why? Why can't this happen overnight? Because every moment, the world changes. You may invest in a stock today, but tomorrow, negative information about that company comes out. Or, you may have invested in a blue-chip stock with a high-paying dividend, and the next day, the Fed makes bond yields more attractive. Investing strategies also change based upon the amount of capital you have to invest. With little capital, you may be stuck exclusively in a market tracking index fund because you cannot afford the transaction fees. Later on, you may be able to invest in individual stocks. Still after that, you may have enough capital to consider investing in an apartment building. With even more money, you may be able to afford the extremely volatile